Welcome back to another episode of the Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. Just a pre-show warning that as we discuss movies, there is a high potential that we will spoil them. So if you do not want your movie spoiled, try to see the movie first and bookmark the time and come back later. As it is, I'm Kevin.
I am Marla Sokolov.
Daniel, we recommend you. Just watch the movies.
I'm Doug, and some of the movies I don't recommend you watch.
I just like to start off saying, guys, we're going to our weekly format now. I hope you guys are prepared. I hope the listeners are prepared. We're going weekly. So if this episode's not out weekly, feel free to email Daniel Print at danielprint.ca.
Only the video for me.
Or call Doug Hunter, and he won't answer the phone or tell you what he's doing. So you got two options there. Deal with them. I'm out.
But it's Doug Hainer. He's here, not Hunter.
Hainer?
Yes.
Hunter's his twin brother with the barbecue. He didn't hear about that. He's got a bigger barbecue. I'm working on it. Because I've seen photos of the other guy. Okay. I don't know where he lives yet, but he might be closer to the barbecue.
So you probably have like a fire stove or something, not a barbecue.
Right.
I just have like a shopping cart that I put fire in.
That's a good idea.
Correct.
Yeah.
So Doug, I gave you some homework for this new brand new thing. There's only four of us here tonight, so you got it easy. But I'm going to let you have anybody you want from Seinfeld. So you need to cast Seinfeld as the Extra Features podcast. Oh, the intern's here. Hi, intern. Welcome to the show. He's connecting to the audio. So, Doug,
hey, Bob.
While the intern's figuring out what's going on, feel free to cast Seinfeld for us tonight.
All right. Well, Kevin's obviously Jerry. I would say Simon, you're a George, without a doubt.
Oh, 100%.
You're angry. I'd say Daniel's Elaine.
He's nice. With me not being Seinfeld.
Bob, I would say is Newman, and I would be Putty, I guess.
Wait, who's Putty?
Elaine's boyfriend.
Okay, I don't want enough Seinfeld.
Oh, get on that. So, guys, what's been happening?
Who's our Cosmo?
Oh, Kramer?
He's racist.
We're trying to avoid.
Owen's coming later, guys. People don't know Owen. Kramer will be on later this month.
I feel tempted to like take a shot at the door and just come in. Like, ooh. none of us are Kramer, so that's fine.
So what's been happening, guys? Anything exciting?
I got something kind of exciting. My son Owen got accepted into NYU Tisch. Early acceptance film school, so super excited about that.
You did text me about this, and I think I left you a nice comment. I want people to know it was non-sarcastic.
So that it's is craft true. Dinner and canned chili for the next few months, right?
Oh God, for years.
I'm willing to send Owen a care package.
Yeah.
I'm going to even send him a care package of Canadian ramen noodles so he can feel like a real student.
Nice.
He'd appreciate that. I saw Spider-Man on my birthday, so that was a good time.
Is everybody here seen Spider-Man but me?
Bob, have you seen it? So yeah, it's just you, Simon. What are you sleeping at the wheel?
Friday night I had to work. So I couldn't get tickets. Saturday I went to a Christmas party.
Okay.
I tried to get tickets today, but the only seats were not optional for my viewing habits. So I'm hopefully tomorrow night when I get off from work, I'll find somewhere to go. I'm going to try before Christmas.
What about the Thursday, Simon? You had the Thursday as well.
I like to keep my gym regimen, and that's my honest answer. I didn't want to miss the gym.
Exactly.
And I feel I pay money for the gym, so if I miss the gym, it annoys me. So if I had Doug Hunter's barbecue Airbnb service, or whatever service he's offering me, I would make sure I was there on that day and the time, because it would bug me if I pay for something and I don't use it.
Fair.
That's just who I am. I can't explain it. It will drive me nuts. So when I go on holidays for a week, I get really mad because I train 3 days in the gym. I usually go 3 days a week that I'm not using.
Okay.
So my first day back, I go to the gym again and say, no, I want my money. I pay money for this. I have to use it. Hence, I don't have a home gym because I've never used it.
You just didn't want to bring like a 2-pound thing to Spider-Man and just be doing curls?
Just curls.
The whole film?
Listen, buddy, the way you haven't been moving, I'm just going to start benching you soon.
Okay, sounds good.
Where I get the right weight.
Probably. But 160.
So, Daniel, can you tell everybody how your job's going as a cooler at the stripper bar?
Wait, is that a transition or an actual question?
An actual question.
I do not have a strip job. A strip job.
Oh.
I'm lost. I don't know how to respond to it.
Start the show. We got new listeners. Move it.
Sure. Well, welcome in. We're going to the House of Gucci. Yeah, my bad, guys. No great transitions today for me. But the House of Gucci, directed by Ridley Scott, written by Becky Johnston and Roberto Bentivegna, starring Lady Gaga, Adam Driver, Jared Leto, Jeremy Irons, Salma Hayek, and Al Pacino. I did not want I did not see this one, so you guys have at it.
Hang on. Whoa. We're not letting you off like that easily.
Sure.
You saw Spider-Man, though.
Yes.
But you knew House of Gucci was on the episode.
Yes, but I actually wanted to see Spider-Man.
So you just decided not to see it?
Well, by the time I would have, the screening was only at 9:30 at night. Didn't really feel like busing home at midnight. It's a 2.5-hour movie.
Listen, so he's not alone. He's not
what
alone.
What else do you have to do?
I didn't see it.
Come on, get to you next.
What do you mean?
It's father, son, and House of Spider-Man for me.
That's fine. I understand that with you. You, I get. Fine. So, only people who see Gucci is moi, Hayner,
yeah,
and some guy who's mad at me. Okay, mad at me, you're up first.
Enter.
There's not many movies I fidget through, but this is one of them. It was long and drawn out. I didn't see the chemistry between any of the actors. Al Pacino was trying to channel his character from The Godfather, and he failed at that. I thought, like, I didn't enjoy Jared Leto's character. I was wondering what was going on with that. So this movie, like, I didn't enjoy it at all because, like, I was fidgeting all through the movie. So I was going, there's not many movies I fidget through. So.
All right.
So you didn't like it, is what you're trying
to
say?
Said that.
Okay. You didn't like chemistry. Okay, I got it.
I just said I didn't like the movie.
Okay.
Okay, well, that's fine. You don't have to like it. It's allowed.
I, on the other hand, actually did kind of enjoy it.
Of course you did.
I went in. I didn't know much about the true story. I didn't know actually who was murdered. So the actual victim surprised me. I guess since Kevin said we spoil things now, I thought it, from the commercials and stuff, I thought it would be Jared Leto's character who gets murdered, not Adam Driver. But it was Adam Driver who gets killed. I actually thought Lady Gaga was phenomenal in this movie. I think there is definitely an Oscar nomination in her future for this film. Jared Leto was in a completely different movie than everybody else, and I absolutely enjoyed it. There's one take of his during a contract signing scene where Al Pacino asks him if he knew this was happening, and the way he says, no, just, I lost it. I thought it was phenomenal. I had fun with this film. I enjoyed it. It's not one of my favorites of the year, but I did enjoy it. It was interesting, to say the least.
To say the least. Lots to compress there. I have to think about it. House of Gucci. way too friggin' long. Let's start there. I don't know what family. I could have got so confused on what accent I was supposed to be following because they all seemed to have their own. I thought I was watching an episode of some cartoon show where they all went to, like, crazy land and just went nuts. Gaga was excellent. I was shocked how good an actress Gaga is. I will give you credit. But just because it's me, every time I hear her, I go, rah, 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 I go through my head. Her song. I'm like, well, she acts better than she sings. I don't know if that's saying the right thing, but I don't think she's a great singer. Adam Driver always impresses me. I love Adam Driver's delivery. I think he played his character fine. I had no issues. I just thought the plot started getting very convoluted as it went along. I really needed, like, a narrator, somebody just to fix a couple things for me, to explain what was going on a couple times. I just found it was going long, you know what I mean? And I'm like, where are we? Okay, we're going over to meet this cousin. Oh, that's his uncle. Okay, that's great. I like this scene. It's kind of fun. And then it goes over here. I'm like, guys, I need 20 minutes hacked here somewhere. And let's make this a little more condensed and a little more streamlined for me. And that would have helped me out a lot. Because I just found it was too long. I didn't really enjoy it, though. Do you know what I mean? I thought the story would develop a bit better. And that was my main problem. I was getting bored a lot. And I just, deep characters weren't interesting to me. I'm like, okay, Uncle Jared Leto, go away. You're just annoying the hell out of me. Constantly. And Pacino was like thinking, look at me, I'm Al Pacino. Buddy, I need you to be a subdued Al Pacino. You're supposed to be this great guy, this great designer. You got the, I got it. My favorite part was the end scene when she takes him out. I kind of enjoyed that. You know what I mean? And I like the postscript. I did, again, I felt that postscript was so needed for this film. So things like that bugged me. I think if that all came together, if they caught the 20 minutes and maybe gave me a little bit more help with what was going on in the plot, that I didn't get confused occasionally. Just because I found it was bouncing over here and over here, I needed a little bit more gelling. I would have liked it. It was too long for me. Gaga, yes, is excellent. Is it watchable? I'm not really sure. For me, I think I'm becoming an un-Ridley Scott fan. From the last duel to this, I find both just didn't do it for me.
So you're telling me Spider-Man is a good choice?
I don't know.
Oh.
I haven't seen Spider-Man. Nobody lets me go. They make me work. Unlike these stay-at-home guys, I have plenty of time. And Saturday, which you're going to say, why do you go Saturday? I am always obligated to. I like to do my community service work Saturday mornings, which I do. So I'm unable to go Saturday mornings.
Okay. Did everyone speak their piece about House of Gucci?
I just have one thing. I just wanted to ask Simon if you felt that Jared Leto played a stereotype. I forgot that question.
I would say yes.
Okay.
I'm not really sure.
That's part of my problem with that, playing. With this character.
I just felt he was just going over the top. It was like the Italian version of the Joker.
Yeah.
And not what I want. Like, Jared Leto to me is just one of those actors, either going to love him or hate him. And I can't explain it any other way. And I have a love-hate relationship with him, usually hate. So, but I did love him in Dallas Buyers Club. So there you go.
Good film. Now, Kevin, what was that thing you were talking about? How you have the house of something? Maybe we could use that to transition into the next film.
Father, Son, and House of Gucci?
Yeah, and the King Richard, even. At the very top. No, it's not. I did not write these down. That's all right. Directed by Ronaldo, Marcus Green, written by Zach Bailyn, starring Will Smith, and Juan Ellis, Zendaya, Sydney, Demi Singleton, Tony Goldwyn, and John Bernthal. King Richard. But it's about Serena Williams and Venus Williams' parents, not an actual king.
Hold on. No, it's not.
It's about their father, mostly.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, father specifically, but parents was in...
Laura's...
The wife is there as well.
Yeah, it's the lengths he took to get them into tennis.
I misspoke. That's fine.
Who wanted to see the film?
I did, yes, indeed.
So you know it's about his dad.
I misspoke. I mean, specifically about the father, but the mom also plays a decent role in it.
She's there, yeah.
Really? Does she? She's sort of...
Yeah, I mean, she's the support.
She helps the girls in their training.
Yeah, she kind of keeps him in line when he's being a bit aggressive with his 78-page plan. So she's, you know, I misspoke saying it's about specifically the parents. I mean, it's very much more about the father, but the mom is there.
Okay, let's start King Richard right there. Sure. Is the mom really there? I mean, we have one scene of her helping them out. I think it's Venus. She only helps out. I really don't see her doing anything with Ike.
Oh, no.
When they got to the club in California, they were, like, she was telling Will Smith, Richard, that like he was being an idiot or something.
Yeah, she keeps him in line. She improves Serena's serve. She goes across the street to talk to the neighbor who calls child services.
I don't find she has
a lot to do though.
No, fair. I mean, yeah, I definitely misspoke. It's about the father, but she's still there.
I'm not letting you off the hook. Don't worry if you think this is going to go away. Oh. Like. The intern is saying that. She had stuff to do. I agree, but the film is called King Richard. That should pretty much tell you what the film's about.
It is, yeah. I misspoke.
Oh, I know you misspoke. I'm just not letting you off the hook.
Okay, it's kind of strange, but all right.
No, strange is you being a cooler at the strip bar. That was strange to me.
Yes, it would have been, yes.
But you're the guy in Spider-Man.
Yes, true. Yeah, which I haven't seen because nobody invited me to hang out with them.
Did you say I'm up for this one?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, sure. Sounds good. Yeah, no, I love this movie. I don't find there's enough great tennis films made, and I thought this was one. You're already with the facial expressions like that. Anyway, no, I enjoy this one a lot. Yeah, there are. I mean, just there's not a lot of great tennis movies, and I thought this was one of them.
I'll stop there. I'm going to interrupt you. I apologize, I am going to interrupt. Wasn't there one about Billie Jean King a year ago?
Yeah, Battle of the Sexes, but that's I mean, I could only name, those are two good tennis movies, but you can name so many good baseball films.
Wasn't there one of Bjorn Borg a couple of years ago, too?
Borg McEnroe, yeah. I mean, with
there's two I've named.
Yeah, but I mean, just... God damn it. Compared to baseball, compared to hockey, there's not that many great tennis movies.
Maybe because it's not as good a sport as hockey and football and baseball.
Can I give my opinion on the film, Simon?
Oh, absolutely you're going to give your opinion. I'm just interjecting like I said.
King Watson. No, I just
said we were going to try to make these episodes short.
Can't you mute him as the host? Can't you do that?
I can't. But I'll just unmute it. But no, yeah, no. So I just, that's my point. That's how I saw it. There's not that many great tennis films. I thought this is a great one. I loved Will Smith as Richard. I thought he reminded us that he can really act. I thought he really got into the person. I loved the way he talked. I thought he really embodied it. Loved how he kind of changed his posture. Kind of by it that he was athletic once. Now he's aging. I really enjoyed watching Venus come up in the world and it was interesting seeing him take her away from juniors, even though that's the traditional path. So I thought that was really, really interesting. I thought him being I thought he was a very stubborn character, very interesting man though. So I really enjoyed that aspect of the film. I guess my only thing would be, I love Venus Williams and Serena Williams, and I wanted to see more of Serena, but obviously they have to focus more on Venus because she came first. So that's why I think it would be I thought it was interesting how they dealt with Serena, just how she's in the shadow, even though like all the sisters are in their shadow, and he's really only focusing on those two, which was one way the mom was like, okay, you ignore these ones. But anyway, I wanted more Serena, but obviously they can only really focus on Venus, so I think that would be an interesting series, seeing more of her, because I've always liked Venus as a player. I've always loved Serena as a player, but I think she has a bit more of fierceness, and I guess just whenever she's not winning, she seems a little bit mean. So, but I've enjoyed her more in the past couple of years. Yeah, very fierce. That's my take on King Richard to start us off.
I gotta agree with Daniel on it. I found these things interesting up to a point, though. I like to know about Serena. I like to know about Venus. I like to how they know that how they became who they were. But I just found that when we're talking about Will Smith's character, I found him he was good up to a point, and then he became like a stereotype at some point, because he was at the club and he was like sort of going into like yes sir, and I'm going, why? Just be yourself. His portrayal was different. I found Will Smith he's sort of a chameleon in my opinion, because he changes with different roles, and this was a different role for him, I thought. So I'm sort of with Daniel, and I did like the film, but up to a point.
All right. Well, I am not a fan of tennis. I couldn't care less about Serena and whatever the other one's name. I did think this was an interesting film. It was a film about an obsessed parent who was determined that he was going to create the next star athlete by formula, and he was a thoroughly annoying individual to just about everybody that had to deal with him, and they dealt with him because the girls had talent. There was no question that they did have talent, and they did put the effort in and so forth, but some of the decisions he made, while they did pay off, were nonsensical at the time, keeping her from playing in the tournaments for no particular reason other than, he wanted her to be happy. Well, she wanted to be happy. She wanted to play. But he determined that she wasn't going to play. And I don't know. I just found that, the first person he trained the girls with, he really just fires unceremoniously. And then they bring in the second guy, the John Barenthal character. And he's just a yes man. He knows that he's hitched his wagon to cash cow. So he has to put up with it. But he definitely has a few Lando moments where it's like, what have I done? What's the deal I have made? I thought that was an interesting take. Will Smith definitely put himself into the character, tried very hard to imitate the actual Richard, the father figure. So I didn't want to see Will Smith in this case. I wanted to learn the story of Richard. And why was he driven this way? And I still don't quite get why he was driven. But the fact is, it basically says that he was right in doing what he did. So, and he was right. He did create two tennis-playing legends. So, greatest players of the sport. So good movie overall. Infuriating at times, but I would recommend it.
Okay, you want to go or you want me to?
Oh God, I'm pretty much the opposite of everyone. I did not like this movie at all. I think it should have been about Venus and Serena, not their parent, not their father specifically. Mm-hmm. I don't know what screenwriter thought it would be a brilliant idea to tell the story of two of the best black female athletes through the point of view of their father.
I think it's based on his book.
That they produced it, that Venus and Serena produced it, but the script was part of the blacklist years before they produced it, so they just came on after the fact. So they okayed it, but I don't give a crap about Richard. I think he was highly unreasonable. He was an asshole. I think they succeeded in spite of him, not because of him. I think Rick Massey, the John Barenthal character, I think he was probably much more integral to their prowess as tennis players than their father. I wanted the movie about Venus and Serena, not their father. I think Will Smith came aboard because he's an incredibly charismatic actor. He can make audiences care about unlikable characters, which I think Richard is highly unlikable. When he was going to drop the children off, when he dropped the children off at the grocery store and then was going to leave them, let them walk 3 miles home, that, I never recovered from that. The guy's just a jerk. I did not like him. I did not like his tactics. I wish the movie was about them and not him. And that's my take.
I thought using the Cinderella was a cool, like, way to be like, hey, stay humble. Like, right after that scene where he nearly leaves them.
That wasn't bad, but it still had the stink of he was going to leave them and his wife made him stay.
Okay.
Fair enough. Okay. I agree with 90% of what Doug said. I do think this film is King Richard, so Venus and Serena must really like their dad for producing the film. And the film is, I think tennis is a backdrop to him. I think we learn about him, constantly learning about him. I mean, the only time we see Venus and Serena, and really the film takes over tennis, really only at the end of the thing. It's a film about tennis. That last 20 minutes of the match is about tennis. The rest of the time is about him trying to promote his kids, get his kids better, what he does. I mean, obviously the kids are talented or they wouldn't have made it where they were. I totally agree with that. But I think the focus of the film is what Richard did. I mean, the guy's a dick. He wrote this book magically and his kids magically get better. No, they had talent and they had to work at it. I disagree with almost everything this guy does. But you know what? Whatever. I find the wife character is very underutilized. Hence, the title is King Richard, not Venus and Serena. That movie will come. I think there is a Serena Williams movie, but I could be wrong.
There's a documentary from 2012 about called
Venus
and Serena.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's another tennis film you can watch. So I'm just saying, I think Will Smith took this role because, I mean, it's a role for a black man. I mean, a white man could not play this role, obviously, or any other kind of thing. And he makes the character likable because it's Will Smith. But I have to agree with Doug. This guy is a complete dick. He does nothing to make me feel good about him. I mean, he does push his kids. He wants the best for his kids. That's great. But outside of that, he is a dick. Doug is right. He makes his kids walk home. He gives them crap about this. And he's also out for himself, I find. Do you know what I mean? He's always pushing what he can get. Like, when they take the job with Bernthal, they have to give him an RV. They have to give him a house, Will Smith and his family. You know what I mean? It's not about the kids. It's about him.
It's about the whole family.
And I found that's what it is. You know what? No. See, I would argue they left the other kid in Compton.
Well, that's because she was a valedictorian. She was about to go to college anyway.
But could she go to college in Florida?
Sure. I guess, but...
So the whole family gets to go to Florida and she stays at that crappy house in Compton?
I don't know. I guess, but I mean, but it seemed to me that it was about the whole family as well, like bringing all the other kids.
No,
right? But
can you name the other kids? What are their names? What are the other kids' names? So three.
Tundi is the older one. Sasha, I think, is one. I don't know, dude. I'm just.
And what did they add to the film? Those three kids.
They're in Serena and Venus's shadow. It's obvious that he cares more about Venus.
So they're not needed. So it's not about the family. When they go to Florida, do we ever see these kids again? I mean, aren't the only time we see these kids again is at the tennis match at the end, where they're eating a hamburger or something?
Supporting their sisters. It's very much about Venus and Serena. So, like, I'm just saying, he wants the best for the family. He wants the best for their future.
I agree with you, and the best for himself.
Sure, yeah. He's part of the family.
Yeah, but I find, like I said, I mean, you're like saying you want a Serena movie, but this is not the movie.
No, I mean, I would have thought it was, I like Serena. I feel like she's the goat. It would have been cool to see a bit more of her. But at this point in the film, it's like she's, under 10? And then she's 13 when Venus makes pro. So she's just waiting in the wings.
Did King Richard really say, did Richard really say Serena, you're going to be the best? Or was that just put in for the movie?
I mean, it could have been in the plan. 78 pages, it could have said it somewhere.
Okay. I really like this film. I am being nitpicky, but I loved it. It will be in my top 10 list for sure. Okay. So I'm just saying, I enjoyed it.
I think that's what's creating this great conversation, Simon. We both really enjoyed it.
I think your strip club's calling you to get back to work.
Oh, shit. All right. I gotta go, guys. Anyone have anything else about King Richard?
No.
Oh, that. That is dark. Rest in peace, Tundy. Jeez.
Yes, Tundy was shot in Compton.
Oh, really?
Yes, I did read after the film. I read the wiki on it.
Wow, didn't know that. Moving on to the power of the dog. No transitions today, guys. Written it's and directed. Yes, written and directed by Jane Campion. Sorry, what'd you say, Kevin?
It's all about the power of the dog. Turn it on.
Starring Benedict Cumberbatch, Jesse Plemons, Kirsten Dunst, Cody Spitt McPhee, Thomasin McKenzie in a bit role, Francis Conroy, and Keith Carradine, also in smaller roles. A Netflix film today.
I watched it today, so I'll start.
Okay.
So, beautiful film. The cinematography is fantastic. The countryside, the mountains in the background, the shots of the cowboys. It's set in 1925. Benedict Cumberbatch is like the king of all asshole cowboys. And he's just a terror to the people that know him, including his brother, who he calls Jesse Plemons, who he calls Fatso all the time. And, you know, somewhere along the way, you know, Bronco Henry taught Phil how to be a great cowboy. And so that means to be as manly, as tough as anything else. But there's a secret that we learn later on about Bronco Henry, which was very odd. But, you know, there's his brother, Peter, finds a young lady who was widowed. Her husband committed suicide, and she has a son. She runs a restaurant in town, and he marries her and brings her to the ranch. And played by Kirsten Dunst in a rather looking rather plain performance. But she's just completely terrorized again by Benedict on screen, and as is her son, who is that alien creature that played Nightcrawler in the X-Men movies.
Oh, I'm just telling them.
No, her son was just so freaky looking. He's very thin, yeah, and his Cody's eyes are.
He was in War of the Planet of the Apes, and he played in the vampire remake, Let Me In, back in 2010.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll always remember him for playing Nightcrawler, which he was perfectly cast for.
Sure.
He didn't need any makeup, just needed to be blue. Anyway, some interesting, you know, just the power. The power of the dog, I mean, the dog itself is a shadow cast on the mountain in the background from the plantation, well, whatever you call it, the farm, the ranch. You know, and Cody uncovers Bronco Henry's secret stash of muscle magazines with pictures of naked men, and we see shots of Benedict lying in the fields taking Bronco Henry's bandana and putting it in places where we really didn't need to know where it went.
Oh, Doctor Strange.
Very, yeah, Doctor Strange kinks.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Anyway, interesting film. I thought the first half was fantastic. The second half drags a little bit. The resolution is a little vague, but I mean, the implication is that Cody killed Phil intentionally by giving him anthrax poisoned rawhide to work with, and he catches anthrax and dies essentially. So, but it's good. I really think Cumberbatch's performance is a real tour de force. And I definitely can see him getting an actor nomination for this one. And I think Jane Campion will get a director nod for this because it's beautifully done. Uncomfortable. I'm not saying it was the most enjoyable film to watch, but it was good. Very good.
Isn't this the best picture frontrunner? Is what I've read.
Yeah, it's in contention for sure.
Interesting. Okay. I can go. I agree. I like the first part of it a lot. Like how it's Western, and then Cody Smith finds Phil's muscle magazine stash, and then I don't know about you, but I have a stupid sense of humor. And when he was watching Phil like Cumberbatch like bathing, and then Phil saw him, all I heard was Home Alone 2. Get out of here, you little pervert. I'm going to stop you, silly. Like, he's running over. I feel like you just superimpose that audio. And, like, you can't convince me otherwise that that wasn't the inspiration for that scene.
Animal.
Yeah. Get out of here, you filthy animal.
But, like, 1925, like, anything Montana looks gorgeous. And that is the same for this film. I like that it goes from Western to almost Call Me By Your Name. With just, it's kind of clear with the tensions that one, like, it really felt like one's like, are we gonna have sex? And then one's like, am I gonna kill you? And I thought that was interesting how it kind of almost went into this killing of a secret deer territory in that third act, which
with
I thought was a great
the rabbit. The rabbit the rabbit in the pile of poles, the fence poles.
Yeah, or just in the way that it's a kind of a. Not all their adolescent planning a killing, right? And just like as soon as you saw him like dissect the rabbit, it was like, oh, okay, that's a red flag. And I thought it was a very interesting third act, and I think that's one reason that this would be worth a rewatch. But it's also a very slow film. I wouldn't be lying if I said I was. Kind of struggling at times. Like, it's good drama, and it's a very interesting third act, but it's very slow-moving, and I think the beautiful, like, skylines and direction and performances, which are all pretty understated. Like, Jesse Plemons just kind of dealing with the fatso shit. Like, I thought his performance won't get as much credit as Cumberbatch, and I thought everyone did a pretty good job, but... I like the film, but just kind of boring to get through at times.
Oh, God, Daniel, thank you for being the voice of reason on this podcast.
Gotcha.
I don't get this film. It's just not for me. I'm not a big Jane Campion fan. I can say I think The Piano is a masterpiece, but other than that, I've not liked In the Cut. I have not liked this. I did not like... Her first movie, Sweetie, I didn't like. She doesn't do it for me. I mean, Cumberbatch is amazing. I give him full credit. I really think he involves his character. I think he is that character. Kirsten Dunst puts me asleep normally. She does it again in this film. Plemons, I have nothing against. He always does a great job. Always does a fabulous job. Perfect. Cody Vickersey plays his character well. He could get best supporting nod. I could see that happening. This just wasn't for me. There's nothing wrong with the film. I get everybody loves it. It's just not for me. It's too slow. Not what I look for in a film. That's it. You're gonna be quiet.
I can see it. Fair.
Oh, my turn. I gotta go with, I guess, part of Kevin and part of Dan on this. I like the film. I like the fact that it was, I like the cinematography. That was great. I find that both Jesse Plemons and Benedict Cumberbatch both morph into their characters in every film because they change. Like he's Doctor Strange, he's Khan, he's this guy. Jesse Plemons was in Jungle Cruise, Game Night, and this. Like it's all like different characters.
Like Mike.
What?
Sorry, I just know him from Like Mike. He, like when he was way younger, like early 2000s.
Near the end I was getting a vibe like Brokeback Mountain. I'm going, is this going to be like that? So it was a comparison for me, but I still enjoyed it. I thought it was very well directed and acted. And like you said, probably will it be nominated for anything? I guess.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. I assume so.
Okay. That's it.
Absolutely.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
I the only one who hasn't spoken on this one, but this was absolutely my favorite movie of the year so far. I think the acting was all brilliant. The scene, I think there could be a potential Oscar nomination for Kirsten Dunst. The scene where she's practicing the piano recital and Cumberbatch is upstairs with the banjo.
Play the banjo, do the bad job.
That scene was amazing. I think this film has a lot to say about masculinity, like what it takes to be a man. It's also a lot about modernity creeping into the old times. Cumberbatch always riding the horse, his brother driving into town on paved roads in a car. That was a nice little dichotomy there. And it wasn't until the very end that you see him get into a car when his brother has to take him to the hospital. I can't say for sure that Pete meant to kill Phil. That might have been his plan, but I'm not sure he knew that his mother would sell the leather stock that they had. So I think, unless he was planning to give it to Phil as like, would you do me the honor of finishing the rope with this that I got? That could have been his plan. I'm not sure.
The opportunity just presented.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I would argue because at the end he uses gloves to move it.
Yes.
So he knew what it was all about.
He knew it was the anthrax, but I'm not sure if he knew how he would get him to get it yet. The rabbit cut was like, oh, okay, it's all coming together. But just weird things that you can't exactly plan for.
I would say it was his insurance policy. He held it in reserve in case he needed it.
That makes sense.
When he saw Phil's reaction to what his mother had done, giving the hides away to the Indians to sell, and how he was freaking out on his mother, he's like, I can't let this guy continue to terrorize my mother like this. So, you know, but he seems to think that, you know, doing this for me is important to him because, and he brings it up. He starts talking about Bronco Henry and how he kept him warm by sleeping with him in the sleeping bag. And he says, you were naked
without a smile on his face.
And then he doesn't answer, but I think he knew. And then there's that final scene when, Cody looks down on his parents and they're hugging in the below on in front of the house, and he smiles because he knows like they're free. They've escaped the terror of Phil.
I wasn't clear on the anthrax bit at first. So when he was walking around like that, I thought he was the catcher in that situation. Sorry.
No, actually, when they said he hadn't come down for breakfast, I thought it was going to be revealed he was. He'd raped him in the barn or something like that.
But. Yeah, I wasn't sure if Cody was going to be the one dead in the barn because there's just a lot of internalized homophobia going on with Phil, I think. So I wasn't sure if that was going to be the deal.
Right.
Very interesting end, though.
Yeah.
Anyone have anything else on that one? Are we going to go up Nightmare Alley? From 1947. It sounds so much cooler as Nightmare Alley, 1947. Like Blade Runner 2049. But that's just the year. Directed by Edmund Golding. Written by Jules Furthman. Starring Tyrone Power, Joan Blondell, Colleen Gray, Helen Walker. Not sure if you guys noticed any other big stars from that time in the film.
Jean Blondell.
Yes.
I can start for a change. I like the look of this film a lot. I do quite enjoy the noir look. I think it was quite good. I just thought it went on too long. I never felt it went a way I wanted to. I don't know where the way I wanted it to go, but it was not this. I never liked anybody in it. I'm not saying they were bad acting. I don't want to say that. I like the acting. I just never liked the characters. I never thought any of them were people I would want to hang out with or spend any time with. None of them. And then you finally get to the end, and I'm like, okay, this is a little convoluted at the end, but I kind of got it. Like, I really needed the carny at the end to explain it to me. But maybe that is his job. Because I thought maybe he was in a dream at one point. Because it kind of goes very abruptly for him being really on top to right in the bottom. You know what I mean? Like, I took me up, like, is he dreaming? Because he was with a psychoanalyst. So I thought maybe he was in a dream state at one point. And I'm kind of like, I don't know if I want to hang out with these people. I don't know if I even like this movie. I find it kind of slow. I think it has a definite directional path. I think it does tell its whole story. But I don't think I enjoyed it. I like Tyrone Power, but I don't think he's what I look for in a film star at this point. I mean, I know he's big. I know people really like him. But I don't think he's my film star of this year, if that makes sense. I've seen him a couple films now, and I find it very unimpressive. So overall, meh. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It just didn't do anything for me.
I got to go with Simon on this, because, as you said, the look of the film was good, but I had to, after I watched it, I had to have this movie explained to me, because I was expecting, with Nightmare Alley, I didn't, and I should have, with another movie as well, I should have had looked on IMDb, but I thought I was going to get like a thriller, a horror, something with, because of the title Nightmare Alley, and by the time I got over with
it, I was looking forward to.
Yeah, because I was disappointed with it. I'm going, well, this isn't what I wanted to see. But you said, like, the look of the film, as like how it looked, film noir, yes, I can see that, but like, it just dragged for me, and I just, like, I called you up and said, can you explain this? And then he says, well, it's like a redemption, just like Willy Loman. And I'm going, okay. And then I watched the rest of it, and I'm going, mm-mm. So I wouldn't recommend
it. I got to think the guy, whatever, who wrote Death of a Salesman has seen this film. It's very similar at times to me. Arthur
Miller.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
What?
Doug, tell me how much you love this so I can get this over with.
Fair. I liked it a lot. I went in, I knew it was a film noir. I was expecting it to be like Double Indemnity. It kind of set up that way. I liked that Tyrone Power was not in it for sex or women. He was in it for power and money. The women and the sex were just a means to get the power and the money. And that's what I liked about it. It wasn't necessarily about, I got to get this woman away from her husband. It's, I got to learn from this woman so I could get money from all these rubes. I thought that was very interesting, and that's why I liked this movie a lot. It wasn't necessarily about sex. It was about money and power.
I agree. I liked it quite a bit. I thought it was... sorry, people are pinging me here at the same time. Let me just turn that off. I thought that it looked a lot better than most noir films did. I think probably because more money was spent on this one. It was a big studio picture, and Tyrone Power was a big leading man from action and swashbuckler films, and I think he wanted to try something different from this. To me, this reminds me of Atlas era crime doesn't pay comics, where, you know, like, the guy starts off and he has a plan and he starts getting away with it, and then something happens where he's revealed as a fraud, and he ends up, like, at the beginning there was the story of the geek in the circus, and how it was basically the drunks. Where the guy would recruit drunks and feed them this bad alcohol and make them the geeks, essentially, that they would bite the heads off chickens and do stupid things. And so we end up with the Tyrone Power, again, character falling into the role of the geek at the end. And I think they ran away from that and they softened it to give him a redemption arc in the end, where the girl finds him and pulls him out of it. But I still think that, I don't think that Guillermo is going to be that forgiving in his version. I'm curious to see how it's going to be, but In the novel, he becomes the geek, and it's expected that he's going to be headed down this road of nightmare alcoholism, poisoning, and making a fool of himself. So I thought the whole interesting bit where he was the charismatic truth teller doing his things in Chicago and wooing society, I thought that was all very well done with his prognostications in front of the audience and stuff like that. That was well shot. And I liked the cast. I thought he just wanted to make money and rip everybody off, and he was happy when he was doing that. And then he found someone who was more twisted than he was, and that woman who ripped him off. And I like that. I like that he got his comeuppance, and in the end he was irredeemable. It's a shame that they gave him that out, but I did like it quite a bit. But I do think that Tyrone Power was probably just a little bit too good looking and too much of a leading man for it, but then so is Bradley Cooper. So we'll see.
I got a stupid question. Is Nightmare Alley, that I haven't seen yet, a remake of this Nightmare Alley?
It's an adaptation of the book that this was also derived from.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't see this one. I picked up too many shows of the strip club.
What's the pay like at that strip club?
A little bit better than minimum wage. Just like, you know, I gotta talk with the managers. You know, hike up the.
Are you doing like pantless walking around?
It's all about the tips. It's all about the tips.
Have you seen me? I don't get any tips.
it's what he gets shoved into his G-string.
I was hoping
you could bring the intern in and get him some extra shifts, because you know he's got a lot of free time in his hands.
Message me after, Bob. I'll make us Magic Daniel and Magic McBride.
Perfect.
Perfect. We're taking a trip down Mulholland Drive now. If everyone's had their say on Nightmare Alley.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, we're letting Doug go first because he's a Lynch fan.
Okay, so Mulholland Drive, right. Written and directed by David Lynch, starring Naomi Watts, Justin Theroux, Laura Elena Harris.
In this?
Yeah, Ann Miller, Robert Forster for like a second, Patrick Feichler who has that dream scene, Melissa George, Mark Pellegrino, Billy Ray Cyrus for like a cameo, and James Caron.
Yeah, this movie, I love this movie. Just straight up front, I'm just going to be honest. I think it's one of the best movies made since 2000. It originally started off, it was going to be a spinoff from Twin Peaks, following the Audrey character when she goes to Hollywood. That didn't pan out. It was going to be its own TV show, have nothing to do with Twin Peaks. That didn't pan out. And then foreign backers gave him $1 million to turn his TV pilot into a feature film. And this film went on to earn him a Best Director Oscar nomination. I absolutely love this movie. I think Naomi Watts is absolutely fantastic in this. All of Lynch's characters generally have very heightened performances. They're not genuinely real. Naomi Watts is exactly like that. Until the one scene when she has to give the acting performance of her life, or the character's life, and it is one of the most brilliant pieces of acting I have seen. There's also something else in this movie. Very early on, there's a scene between two guys in a diner. I think just that scene on its own is a near perfect horror film. It could be excised from this movie, shown on its own, and it's a brilliant short horror film. I love this movie to pieces. I know it's not for everybody. There's dream logic throughout. It's sometimes difficult to follow. I just love it to pieces. And now I'll let Simon tell me I'm an idiot and this is incomprehensible.
Hold on.
Do I ever call you an idiot?
No.
Check the tape.
Check the tape. I want a surprise, Doug. I really enjoyed this.
All right.
I did have some problems with following. I will admit that. But I was loved Naomi Watts. She blew me away how much I liked her character. And how much better. I always thought she was a good actress, but this impressed me. What a good actress she was. I think it could use a few trim spots. Absolutely. The sex scene led a little bit long, but that was okay. I was kind of enjoying that. So we'll just leave it at that. I like the key thing. I wish it was a little bit more in the key, but I think you got to read into it. So maybe that's what he wanted me to do, because I did. My favorite line in the movie is when Naomi Watts goes, "What's the key for?" I'm like, oh my God, come on. You know, I thought that was cute. I thought that was really cute that she was dumb enough not to know what the key was about. But why is it open? I'm like, you don't get it, do you? Like, you know, is that Justin Theroux the hitman then?
No, he's the director.
Oh, Art he's Pellegrino. The director, okay.
Art Pellegrino is the hitman.
Okay. I have nothing to complain about, Doug. I just think it's needed a little trim here and there and a little bit more streamlined. But it's Lynch. I know it's not going to do that. I mean,
I didn't pick Island or Island Empire. So or Inland Empire. Seen. That's what it's called.
Blue Velvet is still my favorite Lynch film. I absolutely love Blue Velvet.
That's a
film. I enjoy this film. I think it's. I don't know if it's for everybody, but I definitely think it's very well acted. I think it's fun at times. It makes me laugh at times. I think there's some really good stuff in this film to watch. And I don't think I've ever seen this before. I'm convinced I have, but I don't remember it. Okay. So I don't know. So I'm not saying anything bad about Doug. I'm saying thank you. I enjoyed it. And that's all I really have to say. I think it's a good, solid film. I can see why Lynch got a Best Directing Actor. I think Naomi Watts should have been nominated if she wasn't. I don't know if she was.
No, just got just got directing nomination. That's it.
But no, parts of this I really like. I think there's so many different films you could spin out of this, like Doug said. Those diner scenes, the hitman scenes. I love the hitman scenes. I think my favorite. When he's taking out the cleaners.
Yes.
One after another. Yes. Keep having stuff. I thought that was great.
The woman's like, something bit me. Yes. After she gets shot.
Yes. And stuff like that I thought was good. So overall, yeah, I really, really like this.
Yeah. You survived this one, Doug.
Yes.
Congratulations. Honestly, I was almost, I wouldn't say dreading watching this, but it's because I thought, I'd seen Lost Highway a couple years ago, and I liked it, but it's nothing I want to watch again. And that one is my only other Lynch feature film. The only other thing I saw by him was that weird monkey short that you put on.
Yes.
I can't remember what
that wasn't bad.
What did Jack do?
Right. Yeah, no, it wasn't bad. It just made no sense. But I really, really enjoyed this one. This has been on my famous watch list for years. It's a lot of, like, 365 movies that I haven't seen that I probably definitely should. Anyway, I really enjoyed this, the diner scene with Patrick Fischler, and just how they staged that, the dialogue, and then seeing the woman behind the wall, that was terrifying. And even when they find the body in the apartment, that was like, okay, I had to check the genre on Letterboxd. I was like, okay, this is thriller, but Lynch can do horror without even necessarily trying to do horror. He's one of the directors I need to watch a lot more, but the dream logic and style is something that I enjoy to an extent, but this is just really great, even if it's a bit hard to follow. Like, I thought I was in for, like, oh no, am I not going to like a beloved film just from the beginning with all the weird dancing?
With the jitterbugs?
Yes, in the first 2 minutes. And then, as a mystery, as a thriller, I really enjoyed it. I'd like to watch it again just to make a bit more sense of the third act, as this was the first time I've watched it. And just with the twist and all, and it's like, okay, I think I'm following, but I'd love to read up on it just to make more sense of it, I guess. But like you guys are saying, the direction, the performances by Naomi Watts and the one who plays Rita, she did a great job. They were great together.
Oh, I loved Rita.
Steamy scenes were a great bonus, I guess.
Oh, that was phenomenal. That's on Rewind.
Yeah, no, I mean,
Simon edit.
I wasn't expecting it, but I just, as soon as I was like,
that came out of the blue for me. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm in.
That's a bingo.
Bingo!
But either way, just a great screenplay. It's a long movie, but it doesn't feel like 2.5 hours. And I want to watch it again. So I thank you for...
Yeah, you know what? I would watch this again.
Oh, yeah?
Like I do the Simon cut.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, just... I have so many movies on my watch list that it's like, I should see this, but I have no idea what I'm going to force myself to.
Your
watch list
is like 4 years of films. What I watch
it
a year is your watch list. I've seen your watch list.
Yeah, it's down at 365 films right now.
My watch list...
Well, I'll probably be done by like 2040.
15 movies right now.
15?
Maybe less for the year.
Yeah, and now I'm adding like a Letterboxd watch list, so it's just... A bit long.
Kevin?
I didn't rewatch this. I remember seeing it years ago, and I think it's a beautiful looking film, and I'm certainly a fan of Naomi Watts in it, and the actress that plays Rita, and some of the other characters in it. However, I'm not a fan of the film. I don't have any inclination to dig deep into the symbolism that is clearly there. And he's trying to tell stories. Yes, a long time ago, when I was just a little boy, I saw two girls making out in Mulholland Drive. And,
it's true. It's very true.
Yeah. You improvised that. I thought Simon sent you a whole script there.
No, I did improvise a little bit. Because this is a show about nothing.
Yes.
It's a show about nothing.
I'm not a huge Lynch fan. I mean, my favorite Lynch film is Dune, so that's sad.
Oh.
And maybe Elephant Man.
Elephant Man? I saw that way too young. I saw Elephant Man when it came on, like, I mean, we don't even, your parents had money, which I don't know how my parents had money, or maybe we got a free preview to the movie channel. Mm-hmm. This is when I saw Elephant Man.
I rented it.
So, when did that come out? Does anybody remember when Elephant Man came out?
That was like 1980.
81. Yeah. 80. Well, I was 10 early when 80. I saw Elephant Man and did not understand it at all. So, a 10-year-old me saw Elephant Man.
Elephant Man is probably one of the most straightforward Lynch films.
I don't remember. I was 10 years old.
Is that why
that?
It's your favorite?
Probably.
Okay.
No hidden symbolism. And I mean, I'm not a fan of Twin Peaks. I've never watched it, so I have no...
I've tried twice to watch it, never made by episode 5.
Yeah.
I think I tried the first episode, and I didn't go back to it.
So I'm sorry.
I've
tried it twice.
Times, so.
Tried twice to watch it. I get bored every time.
So I can appreciate this film as an ode to Hollywood and to the movie industry in a lot of ways, and how it glamorizes things and makes you fall in love with certain things and twists you and makes you complicit in the garbage that goes on behind the scenes. But I don't know. I mean, it was too much effort for me when I saw it, and the first time I just never have revisited it. But I can appreciate that many film lovers love it. So,
talking about the symbolism, Doug, what was with the mini old people?
Yeah.
They were so creepy. Like, smiling away from the airport on the car, and then later when they're like Ghostbusters marshmallow-sized.
I will be honest, that one kind of... I always kind of thought it was maybe, like, Naomi Watts' parents, in a way. Like, they symbolized that, but... I'll be honest, I don't know for sure.
Okay. David Lynch is doing a little bit of weird horror with those ones.
Maybe. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Bob? Are we out of here? Are we done?
Bob saw it.
Sean or Bolt?
Did Bob see it?
No, he did not.
No.
He did not. I know for a fact.
He took our drive away from Mulholland Drive.
So,
it says here that he saw it. He was 18.
He did not. Did anybody buy anything?
Elephant Man, that's what I meant.
Oh, Elephant Man. Okay.
I thought about buying the Krampus Naughty Cut, but I didn't because it was like $40 and ships from... Because it's Scream Factory, so it's like... It would probably cost like 50 Canadian, But it was like $46 on Amazon, and I was like, yeah.
Somebody doesn't read the notes, but if you want to do it in this episode, I did buy some movies. They actually said we'd do this in the next one, but...
I don't read notes.
I know, it's hard for you to read.
He doesn't check his email. So that's why yes, people sent the complaints to me.
All right, we'll do it next episode. We're done.
Too many words. No, it's all right. It's too late. We already started it. So I bought 300 Rise of an Empire, cheap. I bought The Suicide Squad for $10. I bought Harold and Maude for $5. No Time to Die for $25. Rise of Planet of the Apes for $5. And that's it.
For those on the audio, Simon was giving his mime review.
I got a few things as well.
Oh, go ahead, Doug.
I got The Last of Sheila on Blu-ray. Stephen Sondheim wrote the script. It's only a film script.
Oh, cool.
Hard Target 4K Blu-ray.
Fine theaters.
Because I love Hard Target.
So do I.
I don't know why. I just do.
No, it's a good movie.
Yeah, and I also got The Show, screenplay by Alan Moore. So
what's the show?
I'm not sure yet. I haven't watched it. It's written by Alan Moore. It's his first produced feature film screenplay.
He's in it. He's the actor.
He is expected on a future list then, I guess.
Did you get that Sondheim film because of another film on our next episode, Doug?
No, I got it because Sondheim died.
Oh, 2 weeks after the...
Yes. Okay, that's it. We're out of time. Be quiet. We're out of here. If they make it...
We don't talk about anything.
Bye-bye.